Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Anna, one of my fellow travelers from the trip to Zambia that we have just returned from. Thanks for being with us, Anna.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. So you made a comment early on in the trip that stuck with me where you said something along the lines of, it was amazing for you to physically be at the project and actually be there after quite some time of reading about it and participating from afar. And I thought it would be neat to follow up on that and just have you say a little bit more about what your experience was of actually getting to see it firsthand with those fresh eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, there was a sense of huge privilege and joy to get to participate on the ground after participating from afar through coming to the bridge walk and reading Teresa's weekly updates and reading the trip blogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very vividly the moment that we walked up to the property for the first time on our first trip to Cantalumba, seeing the Living Compassion sign there on the side of the building. And there was just such a profound sense of how much this project is living compassion, that it's not an abstract theory, it's not an idea, it's a living, direct experience. And that was very, very, very moving. And as I got the tour and the property as the new visitor, I got to see just so many forms of life supporting life in the project. So the children being fed, the carpenters in the carpentry corner making the beds, the vegetables being cared for in the garden, the children being taught in the lessons, just life wholeheartedly supporting life in lots of different forms. It was really, really exciting.
Yeah. I like the way you phrased that, life supporting life. There's so much in that because one of the things that I mean, on some level, I suppose this happens on every trip, but maybe because we're focusing this quarter specifically on the practice of giving and dissolving the illusion, and that practice being something that dissolves the illusion of a sense of self and other, that it's so clear, and the way you phrased it really underlines it, that you walk on that property and everyone is serving and everyone is being served. Or you could even say everything is serving and everything is serving, is being served.
Yep, absolutely. And it's not that the illusion of giving and receiving being separate processes is wrong or bad. It's just simply that when we have an experience like that, we see that it's just profoundly not so. It's not how life, not how life. It's just simply absurd. Giving and receiving are one process.
Yes, exactly. And so as you walked around the property, you really saw that life supporting life in all these different forms: the garden growing, the children learning, the teachers teaching, the food being prepared, the food being eaten, the dishes being cleaned.
Absolutely. And it feels too as if giving and receiving as one process was so much a part of the how of this trip that the teachers said yes to taking on teaching English because it's what they want to learn, and so there's no separation in that process between giving and receiving. And in the very concrete how of the trip, the students, Charles and Teresa, went through some English lessons with us that they then taught to the rest of the team, that we were all students and we were all teachers and we were all in a process of giving and receiving as one process.
Yeah, and that was such a tangible example of it, the English learning as a content.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, quite literally what you're saying, you, in fact, would sit down and work with Charles, and then maybe as little as 3 hours later, he would turn around and teach that lesson to, the rest of us. So, it truly was just, And I loved the moment where we had a meeting early on with the whole team. And as you know, one of the things that they started to say was, well, gosh, we feel like we need some more training. And what they mm-hmm. what they were meaning is, you know, go get some official training at some official place where official teachers get trained to do official things and that sort of thing. You know, the thing we all always think of, oh, okay, if I'm going to mm-hmm. do this, then I have to go, you know, get the letters by my name or, you know, the right mm-hmm. certificate or whatever it is. And that conversation that evolved around realizing, oh, my goodness, they are doing an amazing job without any official letters by their name. And then to connect it up with, and we didn't talk about this at the time, it was a number of days later after they'd been working with you, to find out that mm-hmm. you weren't trained to do what you were doing.
Right.
You had just, life had just offered you this opportunity, and then you went and found out what you wanted to find out and, you know, sort of trained yourself, if you will, and brought it to them, and that you were learning as you were doing that process.
Right, right. And what I really love about getting to have that experience is that somehow the setup of going over as a native speaker of English to assist people to learn English is so ripe for an illusion of separation in mm-hmm. so many ways. So, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who knows, in quotation marks, yeah. English, working with people who, in quotation marks, don't know English so well, and, you know, the separation of teacher and learner, and even the separation of speaking different languages, it's just also ripe for separation. And what was just so so joyful and such a gift was the experience of being able to practice with them. Okay, let's all be in a process of experimentation. Let's yep. take nothing for granted. Even this water that we think we swim in, this water
right.
of English,
right.
let's be all in a process of don't know and see what we can find out together.
You know, that is really fun, Anna, because I just saw something in that I had not connected up, which is that one of the things that felt very powerful to me in this trip was that towards the very end of the trip, both the girls, around a lot of them around the age sort of 12, 13, 14 that you'd been working with, and
yes.
the members of the cooperative team who are not usually the folks who speak English with us, the folks who know very, very, very little English,
mm-hmm.
and the very last days began to actually speak to us,
yes.
began to actually interact with us in English. And that is the very first time that's ever happened. And one
mm-hmm.
of the things I realized in that, especially with some of the team, the folks on the cooperative team, you know, they didn't learn all those English phrases just suddenly in the last 2 weeks, although many of them they did. But what I saw in what you just said was, I think more than the content of they learned a ton of English was that there was mm-hmm. a process that was happening where they really got it, that we really all were in a learning process together. Because so
yeah.
many of the techniques you brought with us, like the, I think they're in the blog so people can read about it, but we did some fun pronunciation stuff with rubber bands and different things that really were brand new to us. We speak English, and we have been speaking English since we were teeny tiny, so we've never really brought consciousness to it. And so we really were in a process of learning those techniques in the same way they were. And I just, as
yes.
you said that, I just really saw that. I bet that's a big piece of what that sort of breakthrough energy was about, was that breaking down, we're just all in this together. Instead
right.
of that self-consciousness of, oh, gosh, you guys are native speakers and I can't try, you know, make myself speaking. And just suddenly they just started trying it out, and it was so much fun.
Yeah, I love that. Just all in it together, all in a process of
mm-hmm.
experimentation and don't
mm-hmm.
know, and all in a process of tuning in to the music of English.
Yep.
As you say,
yep.
using those experiments with the rubber bands, that it was an opportunity for us all to attune to how English sounds and bring awareness to it.
It really was. That's fun that you made that connection, because, I mean, on the content level, there was so much that happened on the trip.
Yeah.
And I think on the process level, that's a big piece of it, is just wearing that illusion down. You know, another one that I love is, so the little kids in the preschool, how they were our teachers, because the Veronica, Beatrice, Georgina, they were all getting trained in that process that Phil brought over. And so literally each morning one of them would go in and practice with the kids. And the way that the kids were with the lesson was teaching us about whether or not we were being effective.
Yes.
So I just, like, yes. It just felt like everyone was being a teacher and everyone was being a student.
Right. And it would only be possible to receive that from the children if we're in a process of don't know, if we're here with what is, that if we're in a position of knowing and identifying as teacher, then we simply wouldn't be open to receive that.
Yeah, boy, that's such a good point, that we bring our awareness practice training with us, in the sense of every day is just here's what we're going to set out to do today, and let's find out how it goes. You know, what information is life going to have for us? And then based on that, we'd have, okay, great. We've got this. Okay, let's try this tomorrow. And it's just, the whole thing is such a fun exploration of we don't know. We don't need to know. There's nothing to know. it's just fun.
It was so fun. And it did feel like there was that really tangible sense of play and experimentation through the whole trip.
It did to me too. And you know, I know that's going to continue. I think I wrote in one of the very last blogs that, you know, we had no illusion of that. I mean, the material that you brought over, the material that Phil brought over, it was deep and there's a ton of it and all of that. So there's no way we could have tackled it all in 2 weeks. But the process of learning how to navigate around it and basically learning how to learn, I feel like it's covered, you know, really, really solidly covered. So I feel so excited for the team and for us over here to, you know, follow along with the progress of all the things they have in front of them now for the next, well, however long, but especially the next number of months as they really delve into all of that. So I'm really excited to get those weekly reports from Teresa and see how it's all going and stay in touch with them and keep supporting that process.
Yeah, it's so, so exciting to see how it unfolds.
Yeah. All right, so anything else before we end?
I don't think so, only to say thank you. That's one of those thank yous. That's thank you to life for offering this invitation.
Truly. And I do want to say, you know, just a huge thank you to everyone, but especially to you and to Phil for all the commitment and resources and willingness that you brought. It really was an amazing gift, and I know we're going to be seeing the benefits of that for years to come. So, deep gassho for your participation.
Oh, deep gassho.
Take care, Anna. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Anna. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Justin, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good, especially after listening to that.
Oh, me too. Totally.
Boy,
totally.
Is that inspiring or what?
It was great. It was great.
Yeah. You know what my favorite thing about it is?
Tell me.
That, I don't know if I can say this in the way that it was just so clear in what those guys were talking about, that our practice is our practice wherever it goes.
Yes.
You know, to hear things like, you know, the process that's going on there is so our practice, and it's so what is going on at the monastery and, you know, and everywhere in practice. You know, especially with like those themes like, you know, we're on a whole giving theme right now.
Yes.
And to talk about how, you know, there's no difference between giving and receiving.
Yes.
I love that. I mean, and I've really been getting that for myself, you know, just as a result of a workshop that we had recently and things. And to see that being imported to Africa in the project there, or life taking care of life, or learning to love learning, you know, it feels like just all the things that are going on in practice are going on in that project. And I just love how that's possible. You know, that the practice can do that and can yeah, can really apply to anything.
Yes, yes. What I'm hearing and what you're saying is the power that comes from the focus on process that practice brings to our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, the reason that's happening is because the people who are going are so steeped in practice. And so doing practice in that content, you know, and that's what we're always doing. We're always doing practice with whatever content is here in our lives as it arises.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I think conditioned mind would say, well, there has to be some kind of disconnect between the process of ending suffering on that level and the process of trying to accomplish these outward tangible things in a setting like that, but not at all. As a matter of fact, that's the only way it could possibly be successful, as was so clear in what they were saying. You know, it's the process by which they're engaged with people there, and the process by which people there are engaged with them and with practice that makes it all work. Instead of it being just, you know, this is some kind of an exchange of knowledge or exchange of resources or something.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm right with you. I'm right with you. And you mentioned the learning to love learning, and that's what dropped into what I was seeing as Jen and Anna were talking. You know, we're doing learning to love learning here, and they're learning to love learning English, which
mm-hmm.
is that process. And as you said, we use that one process with whatever content we're seeing in our lives.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's the only way it could possibly work. I just really got that as they were describing kind of how it went. And it's also from reading the blogs, which I really have enjoyed. But to go in without any, it sounds to me like, without any real preconceptions, but there's this like this educational technology that's being brought there. We don't have any idea how to kind of use that. How this is going to happen and how it's going to manifest. And you know, but the process of like that playfulness they're talking about and creativity being applied to that process and discovering over the course of the trip how it all can work. And it sounds like it was extremely successful. And I think that's the only possible way it could be. You know, if folks go into a situation like that with a preconceived idea about how it has to go, I mean, there's no way it's going to work because it's not responding to life as it's arising in the moment. And, I just love that because that is our practice, you know, learning how to respond to life as it arises in the moment.
Yes, exactly. I could go on and on talking with you about this, and I'm restraining myself.
You have announcements, probably.
I do have announcements, and we have some callers here, too.
Okay, good.
As you just mentioned, a reminder to read about the latest trip to Africa on the Africa blog.
Yep, they're fantastic.
They are fantastic. It's a great way to stay connected to the Cantalomba community and the projects and find out all the latest news about what's going on there. And I love the fact that the people who go on the trips, you know, they make that a commitment and it comes up, you know, it's so timely. It's like, you know, this happened and it was just, what, a day ago or 12 hours ago? And it's just so tangible to me.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
That's great. A couple of reminders. Our call-in number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406. And then you'd press £1 or your pin followed by pound.
Mm-hmm.
And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
All right. And were you going to mention the bridge walk, Michael, or shall I?
Please, go ahead.
Well, it's just such an obvious tie-in with
the
conversation that we just had. You know, I believe it's October 5th. I think.
Yes, it is.
So walk across the Golden Gate Bridge to support the work in Africa. You know, we've just had a taste of what the work is all about. And, you know, it's a great day. It's a really fun event. And, you know, it's a way to kind of experience the energy that Jen and Anna were just talking about. You know, just kind of being with Sangha, doing practice in a setting that's really expansive and really fun.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I'll be there.
And airplanes even come out this way these days. So you don't have to be local to make it.
They go from here to there and from there to here.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's just how it all worked out.
Great, great. Let's talk to our callers.
Okay.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, great. Hi, Michael, and hi, Justin. This is Justin calling.
Hey, Justin.
Hi, and I just wanted to say, the discussion earlier in the good news was so great and so appropriate as well, because up here in Canada, it's the first day of school, and my daughter, for her going to grade one, was the kind of the first day of school as well, and
wow.
You know, to a certain extent, for me as well, coming back from a recent retreat and kind of implementing some of the stuff that we did, it feels like I'm the student again as well. So the whole concept of us being a student and a teacher all the time, so appropriate and so heart opening.
So Justin,
what I want to talk about tonight was I just came back from a couple weeks back from the Not What But How retreat, and it was for me just such a sweet experience. I just loved it. It was so great. And one of the things we talked about was, and for me particularly, being a six on the Enneagram and always looking for, running my life or looking for security or finding, that somebody or something that I can structure my life around, or that's my karmic predisposition. And,
uh-huh.
and from the most recent retreat, what I came away with was, changing conceptually and turning to life as being my source of security and not even security, but just looking to life.
Yes, yes, and it is a source of security, isn't it, in a certain way? It's not the same security as karmic conditioning is looking for, where basically nothing painful or difficult ever happens. It's not like that, but there's a very deep security, isn't there, in centering one's life around that.
Well, that's the huge thing, yeah. It's completely changing an orientation where conditioning would want me to jump from thing or person constantly and constantly being let down to all of a sudden turning to something which just unfolds and is compassionate and is always there and always for me that was just huge. And so what I wanted to talk about was just, and this is coming down to the minutia and just letting life live and just letting life lead, I guess would be the expression. So one of the things that I'm really, especially at work, there's a subpersonality that really likes to do lists and plan.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past I've heard Sherry and I guess it was Jen talk about, having that craving to want to have lists and not to make lists and just let life lead and unfold. Can you talk a bit about, how it looks like without having that, so for somebody who's like been a list maker my entire life, how do I go, how does it look like just letting life lead?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. You fall on the list-making side, you're saying?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So, it's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard Sherry or anybody in the practice say to not make lists, although
it could
have been just kind of in the context. What I look at with that is, what's happening in the moment? Like you're saying, we're trusting life to provide us the information that we need. But there's kind of a dualistic sort of scheme there, where we could get on one side where we say, well, we're not going to trust life at all, and so we got to write everything down and make sure we got it all pegged so we don't forget anything. And there's another side that says, well, I'm just going to trust life, so I don't have to take responsibility for remembering anything because life will just drop it in. And I wonder if what you're looking for is someplace in the middle there.
Yes, as soon as you started saying that, I could see it. Because I do tend to want my day structured and I want certain things to happen. And, you know, and then inevitably there's always a big chunk of my list that never gets checked off. And that's always a source of suffering. But
now
I think you're right.
Well, I just say now that part is completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Right.
So whether there's a list there or not, the part of the suffering is unnecessary, I guess, and it's completely unrelated to the list as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for me, tools like list making or calendars or, you know, all the softwares and things they have, I mean, this is just totally my take, so only take it as far as that. I'm not representing anybody else's point of view or the point of view of the practice necessarily, but, you know, for me, what those things are is they're basically tools to support me against conditioning. And so, you know, if I have an appointment, you know, I have a meeting next week on a certain day, I'm going to make sure to write that down on the calendar. Because if I don't do that, the chances are very high that that I won't be at the meeting. Now, it could be that life, and this is often what happens, you know, it's time for the meeting, and or 10 minutes before the meeting, and life drops in, hey, there's that meeting. You know, and I love it when that happens, and that's really useful. But, you know, I don't need to go to a place where, okay, well, I'm just going to completely depend on that and not support myself, at least for me at this stage where I am, not support myself with this external tool. Or like with making a list, you know, I often at the beginning of the day will say, okay, what are, you know, there's all these things arising, and they're arising from life. Well, there's this to take care of, there's this to take care of, there's this to take care of. And so I'll make a list, and then I'll choose, okay, what are the things that need to be focused on? You know, to me, that's just, you know, intelligent focusing of attention. But with this, as with anything else, conditioning is going to try to use it to its advantage. And so if it can get me dependent on writing things down and making lists instead of allowing things to arise in the moment that maybe I'm writing down, that's a whole different thing. You see what I'm saying?
I can see the differentiation. And yeah, as you're saying it, I'm seeing it in terms of how I can use, and you're exactly right, it's because conditioning so quickly can take the tool and use it for, you know, a whole host of ways to make, and it does make me suffer, right?
Yeah, well, you gave a great example. I mean,
yeah,
that's classic, you know. Okay, so you make a list. You know, if the list is designed to support me to, you know, to help me to accomplish what I'm hoping to accomplish today, that's great. I mean, it's, in a way, you know, Jen was talking about that in the Good News a little while ago. It's, you know, we're gonna launch into this thing and then see what happens. I mean, that's the kind of attitude of mine, at least for me, that is in connection with life. So, okay, here's my idea about the way things are go, but who knows what's going to actually happen. But I have something to refer to. So, you know, I get as centered as I can. Life is dropping in information. I take a look and say, well, you know, this looks like what is kind of in front of me today. But then there's also an openness to what actually happens. You know, for condition to take that list and then beat me up over it afterwards because I didn't accomplish what it says I should have accomplished, that's a completely different process. You know, that's not what we're talking about at all.
Yeah, and I see that. Okay, well, thank you very much, Justin. I really appreciate walking through that because just as we process it, it's making so much more sense to me.
Yeah, well, what are you seeing as you hear that?
Well, what I'm seeing is that how conditioning will take something totally out of context, and I'm not even sure where I heard it, and then make it into, like you say, use it against me and not take care of myself. But you're right. I mean, it's the mentor needs to be there when I prioritize and write down the list, and the mentor needs to be there at the end of the day when I look at it and see, you know what hasn't been done and kind of think about tomorrow and how, you know, how it gets carried over and whatnot. Because if someone is not responsible, is not there at those points of time, making the list, looking at the list and then kind of revising the list, it can be such a source, and it has been such a source of anxiety and stress and suffering.
Yeah, I think it's a very clear way of saying it. The mentor has to be there. You know, we want to be living life from center. And so, you know, we want to be making sure that self-hate is not a part of it, that we're not applying artificial standards and expectations. You know, that what we're doing is, is supporting the being, you know, helping the being have a good life, feel successful, feel good about himself or herself, you know, all these kind of things. And that really only can come from center, can't it? And so that really is what I just kind of got clear about that myself as you were saying that. You know, that's what we're going for, those things, is to step back in a way, and we're using the tools from center instead of letting conditioning take them and basically giving the whole thing over to conditioning, and the suffering that will follow.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much, Justin.
Thanks for calling in,
Michael. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Justin. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, we're going to break for an important message, and then we'll be back.
Okay.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. Justin, we have another caller.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there?
Can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
There's somebody.
Oh, there's somebody. Let me just transfer off of this earpiece. Hello, can you hear me?
Hey, Claire.
Oh, hello. Yes, this is Claire, indeed. what's coming off me right now is the experience of utter terror whenever I get that. Now you are unmuted.
Oh, I know. It's the worst, isn't it?
It is. And I was kind of like, you know, why is that? I don't know. You know, it's, and what comes around that is it brings up something that I'm so familiar with, my karmic place of, like, I'm failing. It's just right there. So it's like, you know, you're failing and you want to hide, and now you're unmuted, and all you've got to talk about is, you know, the stuff that's not working. So awful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I wonder, can I ask you about that, or do you have something else in particular?
No. Ask me about that. That's great.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, here's what I'm curious about. So you're saying that, you know, that so that karmic, you know, orientation arises. Would you say also that there's a possibility that's beyond that that arises at the same time?
Hello?
Oh, yeah. Did you hear me? Yeah, can you hear me, Claire?
I can hear you now, but what happened? Is that I didn't hear any of that response because a young friend in my household switched on the Bluetooth, so the message is...
Okay, let me try that again. So what I was wondering is, so you're saying that the karmic thing, you know, I'm a failure, arises, which I'm sure is true, but I wonder if also, you know, so there you hear, I am unmuted. What I project happens there, this is what goes on for me anyway, so tell me if this is what goes on for you, is along with that karmic reaction, there's also the possibility of going of something that is other than that karmic reaction. You know, so for me, it would be a possibility to, it's not really so much the success, it's not so much the opposite of failure, but like to fully express myself or to feel part of things or to make a contribution or something like that. Anything like that going on there too, you think?
Yeah, to be free, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking a little bit about today, like if if I wasn't run by this, you know, your failing place, then, you know, who would I be? And what comes up is that, you know, I would be free. And then,
yes.
And then it's like, and then dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, well, conditioning lives in those dot, dot, dots, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. So see what you think of this, that thought that says I'm a failure arises in response to being free.
Yeah. The place of being free is there all the time, and that the you're a failure keeps coming in to dampen that down.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we might even say, you know, you are free. I mean, this person who, I mean, and of course, you know very well that you're not any different from anybody else on the planet. You know, we're all trained to think that we're something limited instead of just life manifesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's one, that's kind of one bar, or maybe several bars in the prison that you were trained to live inside of that says, I'm a failure. But there's nothing real in it. You know, there's nothing true in it. It's just, it's a habit of thinking that we were sort of forced to take on in order to adapt to the society that we live in, and, you know, in particular to the families that we grew up with and in.
Mm-hmm.
And so to see that as, you know, it's a response to that which is, we might say, is more true, which is you are free. You are, there's nothing wrong with you. You're an absolutely perfect human being in this amazing life. That seems helpful, rather than it just being, well, that's something that is just always happens and that it was probably true.
Right. That makes me smile that I am this amazing, wonderful, free human being. And and I really want to mentor and foster more that part of me that is there, as I work with, you know, the unhelpful other way of thinking, I fall into the trap of that it's not going to come back, that those voices, that body sensation of, you know, you're failing is not going to come back, and it does come back. And what I'm seeing is that it, how important it is for me to not make anything of that, not to make it wrong, not to make it that I'm failing, because I'm failing.
Yeah, especially not to make it that you're failing.
That's just like something that this being does, and it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, well, that's just conditioning at its best. You know, so it's just a process that says you're a failure. You're working on addressing that process, and that makes you a failure when it doesn't work out right. I mean, that's just, I mean, that is just conditioning, just pure and simple right there.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is to not make meaning out of it. So you can know that you're conditioned to believe you're a failure. You can also know it's not true because you've had experiences that tell you that's not relevant. There's right? I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with you. That's just that's just the way you were conditioned to think about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that information, you can know you're gonna go back into this place where that thought arises, but you don't have to necessarily identify with it. You have a choice there. And even if you do, that doesn't mean you're a failure. That just means you're a conditioned human being and you're working out your salvation.
Right. Oh, gee, that just makes a lot of relaxation here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does for me too. You know, the other thing about it is, of course, you know, every time that I'm a failure comes up, there's an opportunity there. I think that's what you're talking about when you were saying, you know, you started saying something like, you know, you really want to be there and mentor this part of you who maybe feels like she's not okay or who believes that story.
Mm-hmm. And also to encourage the part of me that knows that it's not true.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-sided coin there. So, yeah, so that's, so that's a place to return to again and again.
Yeah, and it's really the same movement, isn't it? You know, that it's turning away from the voices, you know, from the conditioned messages that are binding us into a smaller world than is possible for us. And at the same time, we're turning our attention to this much bigger place, you know, that we, for lack of a better word, we call life, with a capital L, that's mm-hmm. expansive and is not suffering, where we're free, you know, and mm-hmm. we're not being limited in that way.
And then in this place of life, where life is life, and there is no such thing as failure. It's just how things are.
I know. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's irrelevant. It's just it's a concept that's just completely made up to make us feel bad.
Right.
Yeah. How could there be such a thing as failure if life is just lifing? Or as they were saying in the update a little while ago, I think the expression was something like life taking care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if all that's going on is life taking care of itself, you know, even you know, with you, with me, as we're going around doing what we're doing, how could there possibly be a failure? You know, by what standard? You know, who is there to fail if life is doing
yeah.
all this?
And who is there to judge life too?
Mm-hmm.
And life in its abundance and perfections, like
that
part of me that tries to judge life is not life.
No, yeah, you can only judge life from outside of life. And there is no outside of life. That's what I love about this whole thing. It really is made up. You know, it's a complete illusion that's been concocted to cause us to suffer. You know, it's not possible to be outside of life. You know, we're just conditioning is just making up all this stuff that we're conditioned to believe just so that we'll be in an illusion that we're separate from life, even though it's not even possible.
Excellent. Okay, I'm all fired up and encouraged now.
All right, good. That's all right.
Thank you so much, Justin.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Claire. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, I love how we just wash away those distinctions between success and failure and all of the related ones. It's wonderful.
I know. It sure makes life easier, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's and we were kind of you know laughing and joking about it, but you know the life of someone, which we all know, and we all go back there regularly, probably at least a lot of us do. I know I do, where those things are real.
Yes.
Where it is possible to succeed and fail, and I'm heading quickly towards failure. Oh my gosh, that is a hard place to be.
Yes, it is. Thanks for the reminder about that. I appreciate it. And we have another caller here.
Alrighty.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I'm John from St. Louis, and
hey, Jeff.
Just wanted to ask. I'm sorry?
I said hello.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Sort of glad you're on tonight because I realized that I had some questions I called in about a year or so ago, and I realized that a lot of them are very similar to what I asked before. It seems to be an ongoing issue.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it tends to go that way.
Mm-hmm. And it has to do with, I don't like I see things happening in cycles, you know, the self-hate cycles or the mm-hmm. even... And there's times where I have trouble letting go of a certain thing, like my childhood or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while I can. And I feel like, you know, after great meditation and, you know, reading Sherry's books or whatever, it's like, oh, wow, you know, none of this stuff really matters and everything's
uh-huh.
great, and blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, recording and listening for a little
mm-hmm.
bit. Or email class. I've had about 3 or 4 email classes, never finished one of them. But there's
mm-hmm.
times where I'm really into it and everything's great and I totally understand.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a cycle, and then all of a sudden, I don't want to say it's depression or anything, or like going from the dark room to the light room, or, you know, I can do
yep.
it every once in a while. But then
yep.
I don't know what happened. The floor drops out or something. And then,
yep.
you know, all these things that I realized and all these, you know, epiphanies and all this other, you know, all the training, all the practice, you know, it all goes out the door. And then
mm-hmm.
it starts coming back piece by piece. And it's like, oh, gosh, you know, this changes everything. And it's like, wait a second. I already learned this about 6 months ago or a year ago.
Uh-huh.
Why am I just, you know, going over and over in these cycles? What do I have to do to stay?
Yeah.
To stay focused and keep aware.
Uh-huh.
And
So a couple things come up. One is you're probably aware you're just like everybody else in this. Yeah, we're all what you're that process.
I'm not.
Is
I'm not. Well, I mean, to a certain extent.
Oh, okay.
I don't
well,
know
me,
how deep it goes. I mean, I don't know. And I don't
okay,
know.
Well,
I just,
let me reassure you. Let me reassure you on that point. You know what you're describing. I mean, that is just how it works. That's what's going on with everybody. You know, we have these.
Okay.
These
well, I mean, I feel like I get to a point where I graduated college and then I go all the way back down to kindergarten. You know,
well,
as opposed to. You know, I hear other people having problems, like, you know, they knock down a little bit and step back up again, but and I just
uh-huh.
feel like, you know,
well,
every few months just starting all over. It's like, wait a second, there's got to be a better way.
Uh-huh.
There's got to be
well,
a clearer path or something.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing I want to ask you about, because that was implied in what you were saying before. Is that really true, that you go back to square one? Or is it more?
I don't feel that way. It's certain. I mean, it's really, really basic things. It's like, you know, you're one with the universe and you're one with it. And it's like, oh, okay, I understand it. I get that. And then, you know, for
okay.
weeks, all of a sudden, you're not. In
yeah. Let me ask it another way. Let me ask it another way. Is it? Would you say it's your authentic experience? I mean, I hear that you're having these times of clarity, where it sounds like it really is clarity. You really see how things work. You see the illusions
right.
that are there.
Right.
You're free, and then you have at times, you know, that we
well,
talk about. I'm sure you're aware of identification. You know, so there's an identification happening.
Mm-hmm.
But is it true that that no change is happening as you go through those cycles? So, like, there's no more understanding of how it works each time you come around. You don't experience it deeper. That there's not an awareness of what's happening while the identification is happening that wasn't there before. Is that really true? Is that your authentic
yes,
experience?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Because I think sometimes I'm really hard on myself. So, you know, the voices of self-hate kick in. It's like, you idiot. You knew better. You already learned this stuff, and now, you know, you got to learn it all again. You already, you know what I mean? I'm almost, I don't
now
know
that
if that's part of
that
it, or I'm so hard on myself that.
That doesn't make it true, though. That just means that self-hate is making something up to beat you up over.
Right.
See, that's
right.
that's kind of what I'm asking. See, that's my suspicion. I'll just go ahead and lay my cards out on my table here.
Mm-hmm.
That's my suspicion. I mean, because it never has been my experience that, you know, when we have a moment of clarity like that, and you've had lots of them, obviously, there's something that changes inside. Now, we also,
right.
I mean, it's
right.
very much my experience that, you know, these patterns that we struggle with, you know, these cycles are very, very deep. Or I don't know if they're deep. They're very habitual. You know, so we just go through them over and over and over again, and it takes a lot of going through them to really see through them to the point where we can let them go. And so here's my suspicion that you're doing practice, obviously. You're having these insights. You're having these moments of clarity. And then that's actually changing you. It's changing your relationship with yourself. It's there's a depth of awareness that's happening. But there's an assessment of what's going on that is basically a self-hating assessment. And that's what you're looking to see how kind of, you know, sort of how you're doing with the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. It just dawned on me that part of it is theory versus reality. Because you and I can talk about this right now, and in theory I could sit down and fill out notebooks of all this, you know, my epiphanies and clarity and, you know,
mm-hmm.
when someone else does this to me, I'm going to be such a nice person, and I'm going to, and then
mm-hmm.
in reality, I walk out, and the first person I meet, you know, all that gets thrown out the door.
Yeah, and that's okay.
Right out the window, and it's like, wait,
yeah.
And that's theory versus reality, and I understand, as long as I can snap back quick or realize it, you know, I've noticed that I have realized it sooner.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah. And I bet you there's an awareness.
I guess I think it's an expectation, you know, that okay, I've realized it. I realize that this is a pattern, so it shouldn't happen anymore. I should be at point, you know, this far down the journey by now.
See, that's the self-hate.
Right.
That's not real. That's that assessment I'm talking about. See, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with what's actually happening. That's just pure conditioning pulling you out of experience into an artificially created assessment of what's going on. See, if we look to conditioning to see how we're doing with anything, we're always going to lose. It's always going to look like nothing's happening. It's always going to look like we're failing or, you know, whatever. Just because that's always conditioning's perspective. But I bet if you could, and this is very hard to do, but if you could look at it without that self-hate, I think you would see all kinds of ways in which what you're seeing is having an effect. Now, here's the other part of it that I'm hoping you'll consider is that, you know, that process you're describing, it's practice. You're talking about practice. That's how practice works. So we see something, and like in this moment of insight, it's like, wow, all the lights come on. But that's not the end of the story.
Exactly.
What we have to do is we have to integrate with our entire life experience. So it's in a way, it seems like to me at least, that it's set up this way on purpose, that we have these insights, and then we go back into the same karmic suffering places, and then we have more. We come out of that with a greater sense of clarity, and then we go back into it. It's kind of like wearing it down over time. You know, we just have to go in it, and every time we go in it and come back out of it, we have a little bit deeper sense of what's really going on. You know, we have a little bit deeper understanding of ourselves and life and how what all of that is. And it's at least in my experience, we have to go through that process in order to have it not be something that's just intellectual, like you're saying, not just like that only can happen in these moments, but is actually something that we can live in our day-to-day lives.
Okay.
How does that strike you?
Well, pretty good. Pretty good. I am thinking that a lot of this is that assessment thing.
Yes.
Because I keep thinking, I'm trying to put a pattern to it, saying, well, wait a second, if, you know, I fell off the horse and it took me a month to get back on it, you know.
That's a problem.
I'm further along now, so therefore it should be 2 weeks, or, you know, I'm trying to do something with a pattern, saying it should be quicker, it should be faster, I should be this much further along.
Yeah.
And that's deadly.
That is deadly. Yeah. I mean, what that's designed to do, ultimately, is take your practice away from you.
And that's what it has been doing.
Yeah.
And it's taken me longer and longer to get back, and then I start realizing, you know, I'm having these epiphanies and stuff like that. It's like, wait a second, I had this a long time ago, and it's, you know,
and that's just
then it's a building process.
It's a completely conditioned assessment. And so it's designed to make it not fun, to make it something that you're going to fail at, and so you'll feel bad about yourself, and then quit.
Right. Right,
that's all it's trying to
my,
do.
Almost my whole pattern is whenever I get close to success, I raise the bar, and I always want to do, you know, always keep it out of reach. So.
There you go. Yeah. So this is good. This is actually excellent because now that you see this, you can see this happening. Now this can be the thing you can focus on. This can be the thing you practice with. You know, this is a process that clearly causes a lot of suffering in your life, and so you can now be watching how this works.
Right. Right.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, to have the kind of awareness you're having, you know, really is tough for conditioning. It just backs into a corner because you've just basically seen what it's doing to you. Now it's going to continue to try to weasel itself back, you know, kind of behind your eyeballs where you can't see it, and continue to do things, even in the name of practice, that will cause you to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a problem. Because if as long as you don't quit and just keep paying attention, you'll see it. And then when you see it, there is another place where conditioning can no longer manipulate you in the way it used to be able to. It no longer can because you've seen it.
Is there a trick to seeing it? And some of these things go on. Is there a question you could ask about, you know?
Well, whenever
you're anxious or whenever you're suffering in some sort of way to say, wait a second, I should be able to ask one question and, aha, there it is again.
it's a tricky topic. What I would recommend, just based on what you said, is don't think about it. You know, don't question it. Don't analyze it. Instead, I don't know if you have a meditation practice, but that's what's going to support you the most in this, is you notice something going on, just get out of your head and just as much as you can get in your body. You know, put your attention on the breath, put your attention on physical sensations, like that, because that's where the information actually is. The information
this
about
gets, this gets worse when I stop meditating. So yeah.
Yeah, because then you have less support for being present instead of being in conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being present is not being outside of something, looking at it, thinking about it, you know, analyzing, figuring it out, assessing it. That's conditioning. That's not presence. Now, presence is being inside experience, allowing information to arise from life as it will. I'm pretty sure that's what's happening when you're having those insights. You're not. They don't happen because as a result of logical, you know, reasoning. You're just there and you see something.
Right. It's like Sherry could say, I could read Jerry's book and read something 20 times. It's like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then the one time where it just, you know, you're like, oh,
yes,
that's it. It's so simple. I've been overlooking
mm-hmm.
it, and it's so much more simple than I thought it was. Gosh.
That's it. It's the experience. That's what we're going for. Not the under analytic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's getting present, you know, because really that's where the information is. You know, life is full of the information we need. It's full of everything we need. We have to get out of conditioned mind in order to be able to access it. And I think what we're getting to in this conversation is conditioning has a way of pulling you out of the present into like a thinking mind, into a conditioned mind that it's basically blocking up the information.
Right, I've noticed mm-hmm. that, you know, I'm very analytical, and I think it's helping me. In certain ways, it helps me to, you know, be more conscious and, you know, think, why did I do that? Why did I say that? But it also traps you in a way that, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like self-hate coming around and finding a, you know, back door to get into.
Exactly.
Where you overanalyze things too much that you can't just let the process flow.
Yeah.
You know,
something
where
yeah,
feeling we, right.
Yeah, and we should move on and just second to the next person. But something you might consider just as you look at this is, I wonder if it actually helps you at all. I wonder if what you experience is what helps you is just being present, is that experience, you know, being present and seeing,
rather than
analytical process, you know, other than, you know, calculating how many carrots you need for the carrot salad. I mean, there's not a whole lot of use for it.
All right. Well, I have to sit and meditate on that. Thank you very much, Justin. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. Thanks a lot for calling in. That was fun.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, we're going to break here to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back.
All righty.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing?
This great song by Trish Rexford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Justin.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Justin and Michael, this is Ann calling from the Bay Area. Can you hear me okay, or do I need to take you off speaker?
I can hear you good so far. Hey, Ann.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, I'm really enjoying this show. Thank you very much. I'm always surprised when I get on, but I'm grateful. I don't have anything, you know, I don't have any problem, which is wonderful. I'm just really appreciating practice and appreciating the ability to come back to the breath and be here and not know and be okay with that.
Yeah, that's pretty much as good as it gets, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I don't have much to say about it other than I really appreciate all the practice reminders we have. I appreciate all the tools I've been given. Recently something happened to a family member, and I'm not able to connect with her, but I just really got that I can sit in meditation and be with her and extend my love and compassion, and that's really on some level enough. Not that that's all I'll do, but in sitting in meditation with it, I felt like I was taken care of and she was taken care of, and I really got that sense experientially of how with sitting, we really are extending compassion to all beings.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, in a way that could never be quantified, or, you know, you can't make experiments about it or anything like that. But, boy, that is an experience, isn't it? It really feels that way, at least, that we are, just by the willingness to, you know, that for the act of kindness for ourselves, it just gets, it's like it spills over into all the rest of life.
Yeah, and you know how, Sherry says this much now, but you know, she mentions how, you know, it's such a social relief to not need anything from anybody, to turn to meditation for what we need. And I just have that experience over and over again of, it feels like a blessing to me when I'm not needing things from other people and I can just come to an experience complete and whole and present.
Yeah. It's one of the best. I mean, I'm projecting you're experiencing the result of, you know, a long term, very committed practice, and it's one of the best things that results from that, I think, is that we become able to truly take care of ourselves. You know, we can take care of our emotional needs in a way that's just impossible if we're involved with conditioning in the way that most of us are when we begin. And, you know, that in itself, even if we're not doing anything outwardly, like you're saying, it's just such a gift to other people and to the world around us.
Yeah, and it's really a gift to myself, too. I'm in the middle of some major life transitions, and it's such an interesting experience because I watched this, I don't know, I guess I would call it a tendency towards breaking down, you know, kind of in tears, and, you know, and I just watch it kind of come up and go pass away. It's like I don't become that. It's just like, oh, there's that feeling, and it's like I'm bigger than it. And it, I mean, not to say that I'm not, you know, not to say that I'm not going to have that experience, but it's just such an interesting, different experience where it feels like the container that I'm holding it all in allows for it to arise and, you know, be accepted and just go away without me having to merge into it or become it. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It makes complete sense. And as a matter of fact, that same image came up for me, that you're the, instead of being, say, how can we say this, the supposed separate self who is experiencing these transitions and having whatever, you know, reactions about that, or, you know, or whatever, you know, experiencing the impact of what conditioning is doing about that, instead of being that separate self in it, it's like you're the container that's holding it. So it's not personal. It's not. It's not. It's like you can. It's you in a sense. I'm just protected from my own experience, of course, but it's you in a sense. But in a sense, it's also not you. It's you're the compassionate space that all of that feeling and everything else that's going on can happen in.
Yeah, and in that space, it's like there. I feel like I have the experience of all as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just such a gift from practice, and
yes.
It feels like then there's no need to operate from urgency because, I mean, in a sense, urgency and fear are the same thing. So if I'm not going to a place of fear about it, if I'm able to stay with my breath and stay in the moment and stay in that place of all as well, then I can really take care of myself and whatever the situation from a place that's much more kind than desperate or fearful or urgent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it actually puts you in the position to being able to take care of yourself, doesn't it? And if you were to just leap into the content and believe all the stories and go with all the emotions into all the behaviors, you know, which is what people are doing typically who don't have the level of awareness that you're talking about, then you completely lose your ability to take care of yourself. You know, there's no grown-up there, you know, nobody with the big picture who can really see the being and, you know, what she's going through and what she really needs. That only can happen from a space that's removed from all of the, you know, what seems real in the content of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite a phenomenal experience. It's kind of what you were pointing out with the other caller that we come back to the same experiences and yet everything that we've gone through before makes it different each time because we're bringing all of that experience and all of that, those awarenesses that we've had before to this moment now. And so I just, you know, it's just kind of an amazing experience of feeling like, wow, practice is a new experience. I've never really felt like I've practiced before. And
uh-huh.
I have that experience over and over again, but it's in a positive way, not in a, oh, gee, I feel like I've never practiced before, but it's like, wow, this is kind of cool.
Uh-huh. Life is brand new.
Yes. Yes. That's a great way of putting it. Life is brand new.
And thank you for making that connection. Because that, I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that because it's like several things are happening at one time. I mean, like, and I know that experience for myself, too. It's like, wow, I've just started practice today.
Yes.
And at the same time, of course, that experience is available because of the practice that we've done.
Yes.
I'm not saying we, like you and I, but, you know, everybody who's practicing. So, you know, you probably, with whatever's going on with you, like right now with these transitions, I mean, I bet you've been in and out of that 10,000 times already, paying attention, you know, letting go. In little ways or big ways, you know, the same things happening over and over and over again in life. You're going in it, coming out of it, going in it, coming out of it. And every time that happens, there's a just a deeper experience of life and tell me if I'm right about this, but, you know, a more of an access to that larger place of clarity and compassion that you're talking about in which you, instead of being the person who's suffering, you're in a place where you can care for the being who is suffering in that place.
Yeah, in an odd way, I mean, I know what you're saying, and in an odd way, it feels like, the words don't really do it here, but it feels like I'm being held by the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels, you know, like I'm, there's a much bigger energy taking care of it. And yet, what you were saying earlier, it's not like, well, okay, I'm just going to trust life and let life take care of it, so I'm not paying attention. It's not that, and it's not, it's up to me, so I have to get desperate and urgent about it. It's that middle place where I know I'm being held, I know life is taking care of this, and I'm going to be present and responsive to this new moment.
Yeah, isn't that mysterious? That is my favorite place to talk about and to consider because it is so mysterious because I know my experience of what you're talking about, that it does feel like there's a larger something that is taking care of all this, and yet there's at least a feeling that, well, and I have to kind of do my part.
Yeah.
And yet I know.
Yeah, and
I was just going to say, and yet I know, I mean, that's life doing life too. But it's just a fascinating thing where it's happening through this particular individual form.
Yes, and all I was going to say, Justin, is that it just takes me on a daily, hourly, moment-by-moment basis to such gratitude for this practice and these tools that we have been given. I just feel so incredibly blessed.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, because without the tools, I mean, life is a completely different thing.
So I just want deep gratitude to this, all of the Sangha, everybody who listens, to you and Michael, and everybody who puts the radio show on, and all the practice tools and reminders we have through this practice. It's just so incredible. Incredible.
It really is. Yeah. Thank you so much, Anne. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much. All righty. Bye-bye.
Okay, great. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye, Michael.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Anne. Justin, all I can say is amen to all of that.
Amen, brother.
Amen, brother. Thank you so much for being here tonight. It's a great privilege and pleasure to have you with us, and just fabulous.
Likewise. Thanks a lot, Michael. Thanks for being
there
every week.
Okay. Thank you, Justin.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.